So I welcome all of you for Sutta teaching session. So we are discussing various suttas which are much relevant to our practice. And now we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta, which is one of the very important suttas, especially in the mindfulness practice and overall in the whole Vipassana meditation. So we were discussing this for a couple of weeks now. And Buddha starts the Satipatthana Sutta telling that this is the direct path, and this is the ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo, this is the direct path, and again sattanang visuddhiya, for the purification of the beings, and then soka pariddhavanang samatikkamaya, in order to overcome sorrow and lamentation, dukkha domanassanang atthagamaya, in order to remove various sufferings, unsatisfactoriness, and any sort of despair in the mind. Nyayasa adhigamaya, in order to know the correct path, the direct path, or the Noble Eightfold Path, which is leading to the realization of Nibbana. So Nibbanasa sacchikriyaya. So basically these are the things that we all as Buddhists, we all as practitioners, that we are expecting. And now we are going part by part in this sutta. And here, as we can see in the diagram, there are four major parts. Kayanupassana, the one dealing with the body. Vedananupassana, the one dealing with various feelings. Chittanupassana, one dealing with the mind. And Dhammanupassana, dealing with mind and the various phenomena. Now, so this is in a way a kind of a gradual practice, where one has to deal with the body, especially at the beginning, because it is quite unlikely that we can handle the mind immediately. And Buddha actually warns in certain other suttas like Anapanasati Sutta, where if one is with some wandering mindfulness, weak mindfulness, there is no point of trying Chittanupassana, because the various states of the mind, various defilements in the mind, stories appearing in the minds are very tempting. So one may get easily absorbed to the story, or get carried away or caught by the story. So therefore it is advisable to develop mindfulness using Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, and then gradually one may automatically, naturally will move to Chittanupassana. Now we were dealing with Kayanupassana, and Kayanupassana, the term Kayanupassana basically says one is looking at one's own body. So we'll use the term own, that is how we all think at the beginning. So we have to look at the body directly. Now we can learn about our body in various many other ways, like using a documentary, using a book, by going through an anatomy class, or whatever such various methods are available. So all that knowledge, all such knowledge is still superficial. So every that knowledge stay in the mind in a sort of in a superficial manner, at the surface level, not penetrating. Now in this practice, what we are trying to do is to directly experience the body. Now this direct experience is something prominent and visible throughout Satipatthana. So this is the direct knowledge what we are trying to take by practicing Satipatthana. There are many other ways to acquire knowledge, like you can be acquire certain things or believe something based on your saddha, that is the faith, and you can simply accept something, some sort of a knowledge, some sort of a say teaching, simply by because you like it, or sometimes you can sort of rationally think about it and then accept it. Or you can again accept it because it's coming in the book. So likewise, there are many methods that one can accept certain knowledge. But Buddha especially says that all such knowledge, all such mechanisms of acquiring knowledge is partial. So this, that is a partial knowledge, because you lack your own experience. So this direct touch or direct experience is something that Buddha emphasized, and that is what throughout this Satipatthana Sutta we can see. Now In the Anapana, this Kayanupassana has several, we can say, exercises or methods of training the mind so that mind may use to stay within the body. Now, typically, our mind doesn't have such a habit. It basically likes to stay outside, thinking about the past, thinking about the future, thinking about this and that, about various people. So, likewise, the mind is typically extrovert. But this kind of a practice helps us to make it introvert and to take it to the body. So this is important. So we can't immediately liberate the mind. Rather, we have to go through a sort of a stepwise process, gradual process, in order to achieve it. Now, Kayanupassana section, Buddha helps us to take our mind to the body and associate in the body so that we can fairly observe the body, can understand the body. Now, so this has to be done repeatedly. Kaya kayanupassi viharati. One has to look at the body again and again. So therefore, you can't say that I have practiced 1 week, 2 week, so won't that be enough? So basically, this has to be repeated again and again till our mind become habituated or familiarized with the body and fairly gain some amount of knowledge about the body. So this knowledge is something that we are getting or improving as we do this continuous observation. Now, there are various mechanisms introduced in this section. We discuss Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. So one is keeping one's attention on breathing, and we know that the breathing is a kind of a involuntary process, and it is happening from our birth till we die. And we are now trying to keep our attention on breathing. So this helps us to maintain our mind also in the present moment, and that helps to develop mindfulness. And then suppose you can keep your attention on various postures. So basically, we have four main postures: the sitting posture, lying down posture, standing posture, and walking posture. So typically, we are not mindful about these postures. So constantly we are changing these postures, but we maintain our attention on something else. Say you are walking. So you may be looking around and thinking about something, planning about various future events. So likewise, we never aware of this walking body. Now in this practice, we are trying to be aware of the bodily posture, and Buddha expand it to various mind other sub-postures, including all those sub-postures. And then we discussed Sampajanyapabba, where we are trying to improve our attention throughout various daily activities. So we are, as human beings, we have to engage with various activities. And Buddha says that we have to be aware of all those activities as much as possible. So this is, in a way, we are trying to expand mindfulness, and that helps to internalize mindfulness. Actually, mindfulness is a quality that we all have, but the amount we have is quite less. So that is not enough to liberate the mind or to enlighten the mind. So rather, we have a fairly weak mind, weak mindfulness. Now we have to improve mindfulness, and here, using various daily activities, we are trying to maintain mindfulness, apply mindfulness, so that throughout the day we can be mindful. Now this is, in a way, difficult in the beginning because we do various tasks either while being distracted or either while being absorbed to that task. Say, for example, you are reading a newspaper. So at that time there are various news in the paper. And those may be very exciting, those may be really distracting, and sometimes really causing a lot of agony. So all this will take us to some sort of a different world, mind-made world, and we may be thinking, we may be proliferating, fantasizing. So ultimately we lose the present moment. So this is where we being lost in the content. And on the other hand, while reading, our eyes are simply focused on the letters, but our mind may be on something else. So we are not aware of the content, we are not aware of the newspaper, but we may be thinking about our children, our office work or something else. So that is where we are being completely distracted. But on the other hand, if we are able to maintain some sort of a balance, that we know that we are sitting and we are holding a newspaper, and we know this is a kind of an article written by someone, and it could be biased, and this is something, some information that he has formulated, compiled, and now we are reading. And you can have that set up, and then you can also read the content. So likewise, you have this awareness, mindfulness about that activity. So likewise, you can maintain mindfulness throughout the day in various daily activities. So that is what we discuss in this Sampajanya Pabba. Now we are coming today to the particular Manasikara Pabba. So this is another aspect of Satipatthana, where we are trying to understand the body in a different point of view. Now we know in Satipatthana Sutta itself, Buddha says that one has to practice Satipatthana while maintaining certain qualities, very much like maintaining a suitable atmosphere in the mind. Athapi sampajano satima vinaya loke abhijja domanassa. So this is sort of a restraint that we have to maintain in our mind. Now, athapi is the continuous, ardent effort that we have to maintain, because the practice is not a one-day task or few days task, but it has to be engaged with several years. And so as a result, we have to have such a continuous effort. We have to maintain such continuous effort. At the same time, we have to have a ability to overcome defilements. So that kind of direction or inclination to reduce defilements, to overcome defilements, has to be available in the mind. Even though still various defilements are available in the mind, but we have an inclination to overcome them. So this athapi basically says that such effort is needed. And then sampajano, that let me go to the satima first. So satima, that one has to be mindful about the present moment activities, present moment phenomenon. So this is something that we are trying to develop while maintaining mindfulness, developing mindfulness. So not only that, so Buddha says that when mind has established in the present moment, that one has to look at the phenomena closely, examine it, and try to understand various aspects of it. Sampajana, clearly knowing. Vinaya loke abhijja domanasan, that one has to maintain a sort of an equanimous mind, free from any sort of covetousness, and again free from any despair. So this is a kind of a balanced mind. Now there could be possibility that our mind may become extremely lustful. Suppose you have seen someone, seen some magazine or all these different things. So mind become really burning with lust. On such situation, immediately if you try to develop anapanasati or any other typical meditation, it would be very difficult, because mind is already in a completely agitated state, burning state, because of lust. Such situation, we can use this particular manasikara, where you are trying to understand the loathsomeness of the body. Typically, we think this body is very beautiful, and it may be very fair and tall, and you know, there are various attributes that we say, and we are always trying to keep it very clean and very beautiful. And even externally, we are trying to apply various things, lipstick, cutex, in order to make it beautiful. And we are wearing various clothes to make it further beautiful. So likewise, we are always very concerned about the appearance. Now, if we look at deeply, if we are able to penetrate the skin, so what is available is rather fairly impure things. So this is something we all forget, and we only see the outer appearance. So because of that, we become extremely lustful. We become really deluded. So as a result, our mind is in a fantasy world. Now, this is something leading to various sexual desires, sensual desires, sexual fantasization. So these kind of many consequences are there. So mind become utterly bewildered, utterly polluted because of this kind of lustful thoughts going on. Now, in order to overcome such state, so Buddha asks us to look at the mind, look at the body as various bodily parts. We know that even though we consider this body as a single thing, one unit, it basically consists of various bodily parts. Now, these bodily parts are utterly loathsome. They are not pure. Rather, they are impure. Now, we are trying to understand that. So, Buddha asks us to look at these bodily parts and starting with the most easier to understand ones. Starting with head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin. Now, these are something that quite familiar to us. Head hair, body hair, and nails, teeth, skin, and this is something visible to outside. Now, we have to maintain our attention on head hair. We have to maintain our attention on body hair. Then we have to pay attention to nails, fingernails, toenails, and then the teeth, skin. Now, as we are focusing, we have to look at it in an angle that how impure they are. Actually, when individually we take them, we can understand they are not nice, they are not beautiful, rather they are impure. Suppose you have teeth extracted, and if you are able to keep all the teeth extracted, and if you are able to see them, you don't feel that it is beautiful, you don't feel that it is pretty, rather it's appear like loathsome. So likewise, all the parts, if we take out from the body and keep it in the front, you can see they are quite impure, quite loathsome. So we are now trying to keep our attention on these various parts, one part after the other. So once you are familiarized the first five parts, then you can go a little deeper. Then we have flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys. Now we are actually penetrating the body. So we are going inside the skin, and now we can come across flesh. So if you consider it's the shape, its appearance, and how it is mixed with various blood, and then it appear quite impure, it appear quite loathsome. And sinews, bones, bone marrow, and further now we are going kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery. So that is the contents of the stomach. Mesentery is the small intestines. And then the feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. Now these are the actually the first 20 parts are fairly solid parts, and the last 12 are actually some liquid parts. None of them appear beautiful, but they appear loathsome. Actually, this has only 31 parts. Sometimes the brain also included, so it becomes 32. So there are 20 solid parts and then 12 liquid parts. Now, when we are keeping our attention like this, so we can understand when we consider them part by part, so none of them are beautiful. Now, this is what included in our body. This is what inside our body. But we typically forget it and we simply see the outside appearance. So we being carried away with this outside appearance. But if we are able to penetrate the skin, so then it is appearing quite ugly and loathsome. And there's a beautiful verse coming in the Theri Gatha uttered by a theri called Sumedha Theri. So she says, if we are able to overturn the body. So we are taking outside in and inside out. So then she says that even our mother may not stay close to us because it is extremely smelly. So smelly, so even our mother may not stay closer to us. So likewise, even though we consider this body is beautiful, if we are able to penetrate it, so it is fairly ugly, fairly loathsome, so there is nothing beautiful. Now, when we are using this technique, Buddha is giving a very beautiful simile. There is a bag with openings at both ends. There's a bottom end, also a kind of an opening, and the up also there's an opening. And say the bottom opening has closed now, and you are filling with various grains like red rice, white rice, beans, peas, millet. Likewise, various grains are now put it inside this bag. Now suppose a person with good eyesight come closer, and now he is taking some amount of grains to his hand. Now he can properly recognize, okay, these are red rice, these are white rice, these are millet, these are beans, these are peas. So likewise, he can individually recognize because his eyesight is good, and he know each and every grain, and as a result he can easily recognize all these grains. Now you can see the beauty of the simile. So it has two openings. So our body also has two openings, especially our mouth and the other part. So basically we also have two openings. And now if we are able to look at inside, so this yogi, the practitioner, can see various parts and he can recognize various parts, starting with the outer parts, easy parts, and one can penetrate and go to more subtle parts. Now one needs to maintain some kind of a balance in this practice, because if you do it too much, then the mind can become depressed, because we have to maintain some sort of a balanced mentality in order to proceed in the mindfulness practice. But here if we do it too much, and if we have exceeded the dose in a way, so we can become depressed. So it has happened during the Buddha's time. A group of monks who were practicing this 32 parts, so Patikkula Manasikara, understanding about the loathsomeness of the body. So they become really depressed, and they wanted to get rid of this body, and ultimately they commit suicide. So Buddha therefore wants us to maintain a balance. It is not for us to depressed or become sort of aversive about the body and ultimately to commit suicide. Rather, it is to overcome lust. So say for example, at the beginning of the practice, suppose there was a burning lust because of the delusion. But if we are able to look at the bodily parts in the loathsomeness point of view, then slowly that arisen lust may disappear. And once that lust has been disappeared, you got to stop, because now the purpose is finished. Now the mind has become neutral. So when the mind is neutral, it is not necessary to further practice this type of meditation technique, because then it may go to the downside, and ultimately the mind can become even depressed, and you can even be aversive towards the body. So that is not expected. So what is expected is to overcome lust, and then again take it to the middle. The mind, now mind is in the middle, equanimous. So this is what actually represents in the simile given. So basically, when you are seeing various types of grains, there is no any sort of a lust. There is no any sort of an aversion. Rather, it's a kind of a neutral feeling. So similarly, you have to reach that sort of a mentality, that sort of a neutral mental set, mindset, when you are practicing at the end of the this 32 parts. So at the beginning, suppose your mind is lustful, and now you start the practice, and ultimately it becomes quite neutral. And now you can look at various bodily parts as bodily parts, and mind is in an equanimous mode. Then you can stop. Now, this is something that we as practitioners have to keep in mind. And on the other hand, we can use this same practice in another point of view in order to overcome the compactness. Now, typically, we consider this body as some one unit. It belongs to me, and it is sort of a something, and it is a single thing. So it's kind of a compact. Now, in order to break this compactness, actually, we have to break this compactness because it is not a single thing. Say, for example, if you take a vehicle, say you have a car, Toyota car, say, various, now even in Toyota, now there are so many varieties, and I say, okay, Toyota Corolla. Now, suppose you have Toyota Corolla car. Now, if you are able to disassemble, what are the parts available? So there are various, there are several seats, steering wheel, wheels, rims, engine, the body. Likewise, there are so many parts. So ultimately, once we disassemble it, there is no car even. Now we have Toyota Corolla, not even a car. So we are so attached even to these brand names. But actually, even there is no a car. What is available is so many parts. So once we assemble those so many parts in a particular manner, then we can call it a car. So this is kind of an assigned name. It is not something real, but this is something fabricated. This is something that we have assigned for easy communication, in order to distinguish among various other parts. Now, ultimately, what happens is we become lost in this imposed name, in this conventional name. We become lost. We get lost. Now, if we are able to penetrate, then what is available is not Corolla, not Toyota, not even a car, but various small parts. Similarly, in our body, so we have given various names. So there are various nationals: Americans, Sri Lankans, Europeans, so many nationals. And again, there are male, female, and again, individually, we all have names. So many varieties are there, so many information is there, so many conventions are there. So we being lost in all these conventions. But if we are able to penetrate the body, so this body, similarly like that car, so this body also made up with so many components, bodily parts. Once these bodily parts assembled in a certain manner, we call it a man, we call it a woman. So this is the point. So if we are to break that compactness view, we call it as Ghanasanya. So in order to break this compactness view, we can use these 32 parts. Now here, don't consider that 32 parts in a loathsome point of view, but rather consider them in a neutral point of view, that the body has head hair, body has body hair, and nails, teeth. So likewise, you can one after the other, you can keep your attention, but not attributing any sort of a loathsomeness, but simply recognizing them, like a doctor. Say, doctor doesn't see them loathsome. Rather, he consider them, suppose one has to do a surgery. So then he simply opens the, suppose kind of a, opens the stomach, and he opens the intestines, and he may do a surgery. So there he may not get the loathsomeness. Similarly here, one can see the body as bodily parts. The advantage is, you can have fair understanding about the body, and you may get the what you call this rasisanya. It's a kind of a agglomeration of so many small parts. It's not something. It is not one thing. It's not a one unit. Rather, it combines, it has so many bodily parts, so therefore there is no man here, there is no woman here. So how about then Chinese, Japanese, Sri Lankans, Americans? So all those are imposed names, conventional names. Ultimately, we being deluded by those names, being lost in those names. So in order to overcome that kind of a delusion, we can use this practice where you are paying attention to various bodily parts and understand the combination, understand the sort of agglomeration, and basically penetrate that compactness view. Now, this is another benefit of this practice. So this practice actually helps us to overcome lust, and again to overcome this ghana sanya, the compactness view. And again, this practice can be used to overcome conceit, because we as human beings, if you are rich, if you are educated, if you are beautiful, or if you are strong, so there are a lot of reasons for us to be conceited. So this conceit is really harmful. So we therefore become really high-minded, and we can actually neglect others. We can look down others, considering we as sort of a high-minded people, as sort of conceited people. So in order to overcome this conceit, this practice is again very useful, because once we understand the reality of this body, then we say, okay, there is nothing to be conceited. So it's a kind of a temporary accumulation of so many parts putting together, and we don't know at which point any particular part become damaged, so become ill. So we are using various terminology, and we may subject to various diseases, illnesses, because it has so many components, so many parts, and we have almost no control on the inside. We may be trying to maintain good health by having good meals, healthy diet, and maybe practicing exercise and all these things. But we never know when this body becomes sick. So even today with this COVID virus, so you can understand how vulnerable we are. So this body is so vulnerable, so weak in that sense. So we therefore can't be conceited, no point. So if we are being conceited, that is because of our foolishness. Now, in order to overcome conceit, so this practice again can be very useful. So these are a few facts I can say about this practice. And once we are practicing like this, so we are able to overcome various defilements like lust and conceit, and to make the mind neutral. And further we practice in the neutral point of view, then we can overcome the compactness. And then actually mind starts to stay within the body. Now, if you are again and again reflecting these parts, so mind avoids going outside, because it doesn't have enough time to go outside. It has to contemplate about various bodily parts. So mind become used to stay within the body. So this is something that we expect from Kayanupassana. One result of Kayanupassana is to have a concentrated mind inside the body. As I said in the beginning, mind typically extrovert, go here and there outside, looking various outside things and thinking about past and future. But with this practice, that trend being cut off, and now mind stays within the body. So this is a very good advantage for us to further improve. So once our mind stays within the body, we don't stop there. Rather, we use that restrained mind or tamed mind to further analyze the body or further examine the body. Not intellectually, but experientially. Now, when you are experiencing the body more and more, now mostly you can even understand rising and falling. You can even understand various, say, sensations, or you can understand the breathing. So likewise, various bodily processes are become quite evident, because now mind associates the body. And you can further refine your mindfulness, refine your focus, and can understand all these various bodily sensations. various bodily feelings, breathing, rising and falling, or any other bodily process. Now, if you are able to further penetrate, you can recognize any of these sensations is permanent. They have the nature to arise and they have the nature to pass away. Any breathing, they have the nature to arise and they have the nature to pass away. Rising and falling have the nature to arise and have the nature to pass away. Any kind of bodily feeling have the nature to arise and have the nature to pass away. So likewise, this arising and passing away become quite evident as our mindfulness stay within the body and it become refined. And now we have sharp mindfulness and mind also quite focused, concentrated. And now you can understand all these processes, all these element characteristics, all these feelings are not permanent. They are quite transient. So Buddha says, samudaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Samudaya vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Now this is where we are coming to the meditation part. First of all, we establish mindfulness, and once that is succeeded, now we can understand the more subtle aspects of this process. Even though this body appear like one thing, it is not something, it's like a series of processes, constantly changing, subjected to change. And we have given a name in which we become deluded. Now we are penetrating the body and understand it's like a factory, constantly working, never stop. If it stop, then we become sick or even die. So likewise, once we understand about the body, there is a kind of a dispassion arise. Instead of passion, instead of lust, now kind of a dispassion arise. And now your mind become quite detached from the body. Previously it was so attached, so conceited, now it become detached, and you have disenchantment towards the body. Now you can maintain kind of a dispassion towards the body, and if you are maintaining such kind of a disengaged observation, distance observation, and you continue a practice, more and more mind become dispassionate and it can ultimately become free. Anisitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadhiti. Now the mind can become free because it understood the reality. There is no point of attaching to it. There is no point of grasping to it. So it simply let it go. And now it become free. So mind has found its own solace. It has found its own mindfulness island, kind of a safe place to stay. Nothing to attach, nothing to hold, nothing to grasp. So mind has its own freedom. So this freedom then one has to develop. So again and again mind go and grasp because that is its habit. But now one may understand through his insights that one has to maintain this freedom. One has to enhance this freedom. One has to maximize this freedom. So one has to live kind of a practice, kind of a life, which is more conducive for such kind of a freedom. So then one will understand the necessity of sila, morality. One has to live a moral life if one needs to maintain a purified mind. If your bodily tasks, bodily activities and your speech is not pure, then your mind easily get impure, easily get polluted. Because of using a polluted mind, impure mind, you can speak bad words. Polluted mind, you can do various bad deeds. So there you can understand, if the mind become pure, your bodily activities and verbal activities, speech become pure. So that is obvious. So therefore the necessity of sila, morality, becomes evident. Similarly, you need to maintain clarity of mind. Otherwise you can't recognize various defilements, you get deluded. So one has to maintain clarity of mind. So the concentration, sort of the collectedness of the mind, is something required. So you are maintaining samadhi. And in order to overcome defilements, you need to properly recognize them rather than deluded by them. So there you need wisdom, panya. So therefore you are practicing sila, samadhi, panya, morality, concentration and wisdom. So morality helps to develop concentration. Concentration helps to develop panya, wisdom, and panya helps to further strengthen morality, again to strengthen concentration. So likewise, all these three factors or three sikkha, what you call as three trainings, actually help each other. They are interconnected, interdependent, and they are actually helping each other. So this Noble Eightfold Path becomes one's way of life, one's way of practice. So therefore, in this section also we can understand, first of all, one needs to establish mindfulness. And even in this section we have discussed how to overcome sort of a burning lust and to make it neutral so that our mind further well establish in mindfulness. And when we succeeded in that, we can understand some very subtle aspects of this body, that is the rising and passing away of various processes, various sensations, various feelings, and that helps us to develop fair amount of wisdom, and that makes the mind free. So this is kind of we can say the three sections even here we can understand. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta discussion session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
For any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask the question directly by raising your hand, or you may submit them to me via chat anonymously. I haven't received a question yet, Bhante. I'll let you know when I do.
Yeah, sure. So now everybody understood, so there can't be any questions. So, Jennifer, you understood everything?
I think I am at the level of I understand the words, Bhante, that you are saying. I still need to personally experience a lot of what you are saying.
Right.
So, I'm still on the path.
Good, good. So, you have to understand the content now.
Yes.
Good, good.
Don't step one.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chitra Devi, you may unmute and ask your question.
Thank you. Bhante, my question really is that these bodily parts, as students, we actually did anatomy, but not everybody has actually cut open the body and seen all those parts, so they have to imagine, Bhante. So isn't that not a very a practical thing to be, because people have to imagine all these things, the skin and the kidneys and the the fat and the muscles and all those things, blood and fascia and all that, if you haven't actually, I mean, some things, yes, nails and teeth and skin you can see, and the body and head hair. Yeah. But then apart from that, it's all kind of imagination, Bhante. So can you comment on that? Thank you.
Yeah. Actually, now we can understand, even during the good old days, there seems to have some understanding about these bodily parts. Now, as you said, this seems to be sort of, fairly familiar. It is not that we are trying to go some deep anatomical analysis. Rather, outside, suppose, that's why it is starting with the most evident parts like head hair, body hair, skin, teeth, nails. So these actually we can see. But slowly then one can penetrate. And it is not that you are nowadays we can use various mechanisms, like you can see an anatomy book, a magazine, or even a video showing all these different parts, and you know them, and that actually helps. And on the other hand, so as your concentration develops, and there is a possibility that you can even see them. So that is, in a way, some deep concentration. is required for such kind of a seeing, where this concentration helps to see the inside of the body and to see those parts. So there are various even meditation techniques used for that, and certain sort of schools practice like that. But on the other hand, typically most of the people have seen them maybe using a corpse, if they have been to a mortuary or to a, say, operating theater. Most of the people, I mean, they seems to have kind of an understanding about these bodily parts. So that could be the reason that Buddha has given these 32. And there are, I mean, as you know, there are so many parts available in the body. So this 32 does not mean that we only have 32, but the most prominent 32 has given. Now, if you are familiar with various other parts, that's also can be included. And again, if you are not familiar with certain parts, that can be excluded. So that the idea is to have some understanding about various bodily parts and to contemplate about them, so that you may remove the lust, remove conceit, remove the compactness view. So that is the idea. So as you said, so for the people who doesn't have any kind of an understanding about bodily parts, it could be difficult. Yes.
That's but also, as you said, now you can have these three-dimensional views. So I suppose people, if they really want to, can see those designs, because
yes,
you can see these three-dimensional views of the body, I presume. So that is another way people want to, I suppose they can bump these, isn't that right?
Correct, definitely. Because, I mean, as I said, I mean, if you have some knowledge about these parts, that could be the kind of sutame jnana, the heard knowledge. Now here we are trying to sort of internalize that knowledge. So whenever our mind become deluded, so we are using that knowledge as a meditation practice in order to recognize one after the other, one part after the other, so that the mind again become neutral. So our mind again become pure, free from lust, and similarly free from conceit, and again free from compactness view.
Yes, I understand, Bhante. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bhante, does the practice of Kaya Nupassana essentially, can that be as effective as this contemplation of the 32 parts of the body and removing lust?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
So if we can know the element characteristics,
mm-hmm,
of the body,
yeah,
use that, essentially that's Kaya Nupassana.
Yes.
Is that as effective as this 32 parts contemplation and removing lust?
Yeah, I mean, so actually sometimes we can say like this, practical point of view, you can actually practice either 32 parts, either say element characteristics, or both. Say for example, suppose your mind is lustful. Now you start practicing 32 parts, and now mind become neutral. Now slowly, now since the mind is now restrained and in a neutral position, and quite being with the body, now easily one can understand the element characteristics. And now you are going deeper, and the element characteristics are visible. Now, as a result, so you can say, depends on the circumstance, you can use any of these techniques. And if you are quite familiar with the element characteristics, you can immediately go to see element characteristics and assume that even you are familiar with, assume that at the moment your mind is lustful. So immediately practicing element characteristics could even be difficult, because one has to have good command of it in order to remove lust. But at the beginner's level, so element characteristics are not yet evident, and your mindfulness is also not developed, and the hindrances are quite powerful. So as a result, it is not easy to remove lust. On such situation, this kind of 32 parts practice would be quite beneficial. So basically, it depends on the circumstance. So say, for example, if a yogi's life, So in the first, say, first period, probably one may utilize 32 parts. Then mind become fairly free from lust. Then he is continuing element characteristics. Now after certain amount of time, then mind is less with lust. So you can even handle lust, and you can even be mindful about lust. So now lust may not overwhelm you. On such situation, you don't need 32 parts practice at all. You can immediately go to element characteristics, and even not even kayanupassana, you can even go to chittanupassana. So likewise, so depending on the circumstance, we have to use this technique. Yeah.
And for the next question, I'd like to invite Kumudini to please ask your question directly.
Bhante, my question is, you were talking about the Siva and Samadhi and Panya. In this case, did you mean Samadhi as in Jhana?
No.
Or Vipassana Samadhi?
Yeah, actually not about Jhana. So in Vipassana, Vipassana, what we require is the sort of clarity of mind. You can understand various defilements available in the mind. And again, once you need to practice Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, you need certain amount of focused attention, that the mind is not distracted. It does not jump to this and that. Suppose you want to focus on a feeling, it may be a painful feeling. So you have to maintain that focus for quite a long time in order to understand that feeling. So such kind of concentration is required, but not jhana.
Not jhana.
Not jhana,
okay.
Yes.
Now this practice, Bhantev, I have been reading some books from Ajahn Brahmavan. So he says that you have to give jhana in order to liberate. Is that your understanding too?
No. Basically, jhana is not an essential thing. So these are different, one can say different beliefs in various schools. There are certain schools says, okay, jhana is a must. One has to have jhana to practice vipassana. But certain many other schools say it is not necessary. I mean, it is necessary to have a certain amount of concentration, but not to the level of jhana. And even one has jhanic concentration, if you want to practice vipassana, you have to emerge from jhana. While being in the jhana, you can't practice vipassana. Rather, you have to emerge from jhana, and then you have to practice vipassana. Now, say for example, if you consider Sayado U Pandita, Sayado U Jyotika, Sayado, Mahasi Sayado. So likewise, so many, prominent vipassana teachers, actually they say, jhana is not a must. And even Achan Cha, Ajahn Sumedho, and there are so many teachers who basically does not say that jhana is a must. And you can practice vipassana, with what you call the neighborhood concentration. There are levels of concentration, what we call the first one has the neighborhood concentration, Upachara Samadhi, and then one reaches this jhana, Appana Samadhi, and the Upachara Samadhi is quite enough to practice or to begin vipassana.
Bhante, my confusion in understanding this is because Ajahn Chah is Ajahn Brahmavamsa's teacher.
Yes,
and
yes.
He claims that jhana is necessary, but I am, in my own experience, I have practiced Goenka's vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
And I have reached through that a certain type of jhana type of state.
Exactly. That is possible.
So what is that?
Yeah, that's what I am telling. Now, through vipassana practice also you get more higher concentrations. Even that is surpassing the jhanic concentration. So, so therefore, that is why I am telling. Now, in order to begin vipassana, jhana is not a must. So, you need to have a certain amount of concentration, true. But it is not up to the level of jhana. And once you are developing vipassana, once you are developing vipassana, the vipassana itself develop another types of various other samadhis. So that's why called, say, sunyata samadhi, appanihita samadhi, animitta samadhi, the what you call the sunyata is the emptiness concentration, appanihita is the desireless concentration, animitta samadhi is the signless concentration. So likewise, there are various types of concentrations related to the vipassana as well. And before that, actually, when you are observing any sort of a phenomena, you have the kanika samadhi, what you call the instantaneous concentration. So instantly you have to have concentration there, then and there.
Right.
So likewise, the vipassana practice has its own domain and it has its many other types of concentrations. And actually those are even surpassing the samatha concentrations. And again, on the other hand, they even merge. Say, for example, you start with some amount of concentration and suppose you develop vipassana, practice satipatthana, and you even can end up with arupa jhana. These are fairly interconnected. One has to use very beautifully. Now, if you refer Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, so Buddha very clearly says how one's gradual practice, in vipassana, and ultimately even leads or one will lands on the arupavachara jhana, that one has to use as a kind of a foundation in order to uproot various subtle defilements. So one may apply various vipassana techniques to uproot various defilements, but the foundation, the basic level, the fundamental level becomes sort of a fairly equal to arupa jhana.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bhante. Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome.
So next question, Bhante, by listening to Dhamma, we get a superficial understanding of the unsatisfactoriness of body. Is it the case that we need to practice this meditation for a long time in order to overcome lust that arises in our mind?
By reading books, listening to Dhamma, we can get some understanding. As you said, it is in the superficial level. And now, that is not enough. So that does not actually last for a long time. I mean, till that is remaining in the mind for some time, your mind can become free from lust or free from any other defilement. But as that memory goes away, that is quite quickly happens, and again mind get defiled. But on the other hand, one becomes a practice meditation, vipassana meditation, so that is actually going more deeper and is able to sort of arouse wisdom, arouse concentration. And that actually makes a kind of a permanent change in the mind, irreversible change in the mind. So that is where we can be confident that the now mind may not completely collapse to the previous stages. Rather, now there are certain irreversible levels in the one's practice. So till that, one is in a way kind of unsafe. One can always drop down to the zero level if one does not practice. Yeah. Back to you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Bhante. And the next question, can you please explain Nama Rupa Paricheda Chana, seeing Nama Rupa separately?
Yeah. Say, for example, we'll take one simple example. Say you are practicing walking meditation. So suppose you are starting with left, right, or lifting, moving, pacing, so likewise. And then you are able to tame the mind. You are able to concentrate the mind. Now suppose you have stopped that kind of labeling, that kind of a noting, and you are able to maintain continuous mindfulness. Fairly the mind is focused. Now you can recognize various element characteristics. When your foot is lifting, so you can understand so many movements. And similarly, when you are moving forward, sort of so many movements. And again, sort of heaviness. And again, when you are placing, so many movements. And you are keeping it on the ground, so many other sensations. Say, for example, hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness. So likewise, these are all called rupa. These are all element characteristics, elements in a way. Now, so how you know it? So this knowing mind is the nama. So all these element characteristics come under the rupa kammatthana, or the rupa khanda, the material aggregate, that is the rupa. And how you know this rupa, how you know these various element characteristics, so that is the knowing part. So that knowing part belongs to the nama, the mental aspect. So there are, now you can distinctly know there are various element characteristics that actually belongs to the material aggregate, and there is a knowing aspect, so that actually belongs to the mental aspect or the mental aggregates. Now you can distinctly know this. Now you have this nama rupa paricheda jnana. So basically, this is a very, in a way, very early level of understanding, kind of an insight may available for a vipassana yogi, where one is able to clearly recognize an object and the knowing mind. There's a recognition happens. So this recognition is in the mental aspect, mental side, and the subject is actually the object is actually the rupa. So if one is able to clearly know this as a separate two things, then one say, okay, this is the nama rupa paricheda jnana. So this is actually later development into the vipassana, and Buddha has never called about such kind of an insight. But anyway, we can say it is a kind of a valid recognition, where one can understand there's a knowing part that belongs to the mind, and then the other side, that is the elements. Yeah.
Okay. It is.
Go ahead.
It is a step in the path, though, isn't it? An early step in the path.
Yeah, true. True.
Progress.
Yes, because typically our mind is deluded. I mean, we don't do that kind of an analysis or this kind of a proper understanding. We typically being carried away by the object. Suppose you are looking at a sight. So immediately your mind being attracted to that, you being now proliferating on that. But how to disengage from this experience? How to have a distance observation? So this is where the Namurupa Paricheda Jnana is quite useful, where you are able to see the sight as a sight and the knowing mind as a knowing mind. So you have a kind of a disengaged observation.
And then the Bhanga Jnana also comes?
No. Bhanga Jnana is fairly far away one.
Well, yeah.
Okay, and then I believe this may be the last question.
Okay.
I'd like to invite Indira to please ask the question directly. Hello, Indira, can you hear us? I see your microphone is unmuted, but we can't hear you.
Yeah, seems to have a technical problem there.
Yeah, I can hear some echo, but I can't actually hear you, Indira, sorry. You can also send your question via the chat if that's easier.
Jennifer, can I just add in something, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. One day about this this jnana that you were talking about, the nama rupa paricheda jnana.
Jnana, yes.
Yes, that is at the very early stages. Did I understand that correctly?
Exactly.
Where you,
yes.
You do, and the bhanga is when you go more deeper.
Yes, that's right.
So, because actually, after you meditate, if you are a regular meditator, this nama rupa paricchedana jnana, it comes quite easily, isn't it? But
yes,
it's quite early stages.
Yes. That's why, I mean, there are actually, say for example, during the Buddha's time, I mean, there are no that kind of a series of jnanas mentioned in the books. So they have mentioned only a couple of very evident jnana, evident vipassana knowledges, and especially the seven types of purification, visuddhi. And then later, with the sort of after the passing away of the Buddha, now people are thinking in this way, that way. Now they come up with 9 vipassana knowledges, 10 vipassana knowledges, 16 vipassana knowledges, 18 vipassana knowledges. So likewise, now the system has fairly complicated. So there are this Namarupa Paricheda Jnana is at the very early stages, and it is being introduced after the passing away of the Buddha.
And just one thing, I just want to add, Bhantera Lukuandro, he has said in the retreat situation that Mahase Sayadaw, he talks about Vipassana Jhana. So the lady earlier was talking about those things, so I just thought I'll add that, Bhantera, that's what I have been taught in me.
Right. So yes, so Vipassana Jhana is another thing that actually introduced recently by Sayadaw Pandita, where one can sort of have a kind of analogy between the Vipassana levels and the Samatha Jhana. Say for example, when you are able to fairly concentrate on a particular phenomenon, so there you have to apply your mind again and again to the phenomenon. So the vitakka is available. And further, you are closely examining that phenomena. So therefore, the vichara is available. And once you are succeeding, there's a kind of a rupture, sort of a happiness, because your effort being successful. Now the rupture is also available. And once you are doing it quite well, so kind of a happiness, kind of a sort of comfort, sukha is also available. And your mind is well concentrated. And the ekaggata is also available. So if you consider the jhana factor, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata, so you can really well found in the vipassana practice as well. So therefore we can say this is the first vipassana jhana. And then say you are going to the arising and passing away level of knowledge. So then you can again find kind of an analogy between that and the say second jhana or third jhana, like that. So there you can understand, so based on the jhana factors and what are the available vipassana characteristics, you can have a kind of an analogy. So therefore Sayadaw Pandita has come up with such kind of a criterion that okay, there are 4 vipassana jhanas, and they are quite some level quite similar to first jhana, another level belong similar to second jhana, another level belongs to third jhana, and another level belongs to fourth jhana. So likewise, he has listed this in this very life in his book. So no one has sort of argued in that. Actually, we can say it is true, because when we consider the jhana factors, so that also are, so we can say it is available. Yes.
Because I don't know, Bhantera, I feel that I have an overlap. I don't know, because I think in the samadhi, when you get the samadhi, you get all these the color and all that. I don't think you are supposed to get it in the vipassana. Is that right, Bhante?
Yes, correct. So
you
actually
know all this color.
Yeah, colors and all are sort of still in the what you call premature level. Say if one wants to get absorbed to anapanasati during, suppose one is developing concentration, the jhana using anapanasati. So when one is developing anapanasati, the anapanasati sign has to appear. So at the early stages, it could be sort of kind of different colored. But later that light become typically mostly maybe white or transparent. And that is where you have a fairly high concentrated level of concentration. So that is more possible of absorbing. Maybe possible, yeah.
Because so, at that stage, Bhante, I go into the vipassana, so it's like a mixture for me.
Ah,
It's a mixture for me.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm doing it correctly, but I think that because we want to develop wisdom, and when we have limited time, especially not in retreats, but when we are in the home, it's for me, I feel that we should go along at some stage, interrupt that and go into the vipassana.
Correct.
Bhante.
Correct. So I agree with you. Because I mean,
yes.
absorbing or some of the concentrations fairly is deep, and that deep concentrations actually blocks the sort of knowing part, because you can even avoid arising of various defilements because of this deep concentration. But on the other hand, in the vipassana practice, we need some amount of raw material for the practice. And
yes.
As I said again, having necessary amount of concentration is enough. No need to go and spend long time in the deep concentration, and it's a waste of time, as you say. So therefore, so we can understand that the concentration is developing, as you said, because of the appearance of these various lights and various signs. And so once you know that, so you are confident, okay, now the necessary amount of concentration is available. Now you can switch to the observation.
Yes,
yeah.
Bhante. Thank you
for
yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Bhante. So the question that I received from Indira is, when a person is diagnosed with a terminal illness like cancer, how can this Patikula Manasikara help?
Oh, I think they are using the Patikula aspect. The loathsomeness aspect may further depress him. So I don't recommend this kind of practice for such person, because now if he's already sort of in a down mind, sort of a depressed mind, so using this kind of practice will further makes him collapse, make him further depressed. So instead of that, he better go for another type of practice, say using sort of trying to arouse some energy, sort of positive aspect, positive atmosphere in the mind, and even to the feeling. Even to the Vedanapasana is fine. I mean, there you are using various pains available in the body, but being in a neutral mindset. And you are developing Vipassana, true, but in the Vedanapasana level. Not looking at it in a loathsome way, but rather in a more actual way, more realistic way. So that may be better, rather than using the loathsomeness of the body that might lead sort of a depression.
Thank you, Bhante. What about something like the Brahma Vihara practice?
Yeah, that's also true. That's right. So one has to develop some positive atmosphere in the mind. So Brahma Vihara practices, Buddha Anusati, so that you get some positive feeling in yourself. So rather than trying to further become negative, you make sort of the mind a little happy and uplifted. So then you can go deeper. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. That is all for all of the questions today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your teachings.
Sure. So thank you very much for the participation. Then we'll wind up the session by sharing the merits in the typical traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanang. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු